One of the interesting things is, like, the National Institute of Health even said 95% of disease is caused by stress. But that's as far as they went, explaining what's the physiological response, what's triggering it. And so that's why I was so hard-pressed, because I would put clients on detox programs and work with them, and they progress well, and then all of a sudden they just hit a wall. And it's like, it was finally, once I looked at the dental, understood the whole neurological connection there, and added the stress response to it, it was like, this is where everything, all the action gets, you know, it's like the snowball rolling down the hill. You make a little one, and then once you let it go down the hill, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. That's right. You're doing something to directly stop it.
The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
And today I'm going to be talking to Wes Verwell. He's an international speaker and an expert in light therapy and other energetic modalities, and he uses it to help people heal and improve their health. I want to start out by just asking, what exactly is light therapy? Now, most people have never really heard of this.
Well, light therapy probably has the longest track record in history of being an actual medical modality. Like, it started way back in 2500 BC with the Egyptians doing and perfecting color therapy. Using different types of crystals, they would use those as a filter, and they started associating different colors that would help with different types of symptoms. Like, certain colors would work very well with inflammation in the body, different type of skin conditions, things such as that. So yeah, it's kind of,
wow.
It's been around for, thousands of years.
Yeah.
And heliotherapy, that's just, being exposed to the sun specifically. Niels Finsen got his Nobel Prize in medicine. I'm not sure if it was the 1920s or close to it, helping to treat tuberculosis by having people out in the sun.
Well, why do you think it's been kindly suppressed all these years, like a lot of other healing modalities that's been suppressed? How come every doctor's not using it?
Well, that's kind of a good question, and actually it's a little bit of a double-bladed answer, because quite honestly, they've been using light therapy in the hospitals. Whenever they have a premature baby, if the baby happens to have jaundice, they'll put them into an incubator, and they used to use UV light, but now they're using blue light, because they found, primarily based on the bulbs they were using, that this is far more effective in helping to resolve the jaundice and get rid of it. So a lot of medical doctors will say to me, it's like, this light therapy, it's a bunch of woo-woo kind of stuff. And I'm saying, wow, because you guys have been using it for, probably about 60 years.
Yeah.
And the hospitals are the premiums.
Yeah, and they didn't realize it. Now, you have taught some medical doctors.
Yes.
To use this. Now, is this, maybe going to get more popular in the real doctor world, as I call it?
We're definitely seeing a greater influx of attention from the medical field, because, there's over 4,600 research articles which prove the efficacy of light therapy with a multitude of conditions. And it's there's too much there to deny it. And it's just the fact of getting the education out there and showing people that this truly is a legitimate modality that can replace, a lot of cases, medications.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, I heard you say in another interview that it has helped MRSA infections. Let's talk a little bit about, what it's used for.
There's actually was a study done, I believe it was in out of New York. His last name was N. Wemica. It's kind of hard to pronounce. But in his study, he showed, using blue light of a certain wavelength or hue of color, he was able to pretty much kill the staph bacteria, the MRSA. So that's what his research showed. And of course, in application and field usage, I've seen it happen over and over again, where the actual antibiotics did not work, due to the fact that it's, MRSA is considered like a superbug and antibiotic resistant, but the blue light effectively dealt with it, and, very, very quickly.
So this might be the answer to superbugs and to the antibiotic resistance.
Well, at this point, I wouldn't say that definitively, but
it could potentially be, though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's already proven itself in relation to that, as well as even forms of strep. I've been trying to, get a hold of some practitioners out there and try it on the flesh eating disease. Like, it's a very dangerous form of strep, to see if it will actually arrest it and shut it down from increasing, and help the tissue to respond and come back.
Yeah.
I've seen phenomenal results using it on where gangrene was actually involved, where it helped to shut it down, increasing the circulation and shutting down the swelling, the inflammation, and everything involved.
Mm-hmm. So it must be good for diabetes.
Well,
if it gets to the end stage.
One of the things with where light therapy has shown some great success, and there's lots of research behind it, is with diabetic ulcers. A lot of cases, they'll have these open sores, you know, they'll cut themselves. And when they're diabetic, they don't produce enough nitric oxide in the body. And so that's pretty much from the actual breakdown of insulin specifically. So if you don't produce much insulin, you're obviously not able to kind of restock the nitric oxide shells in the body. And so by utilizing light therapy, we can get, you know, assist the production within the body and help close up these wounds. And it's showing, you know, lots of research behind it and great results. Now, actually working specifically, helping to resolve the diabetes in and of itself, I personally work with people who are type 2 diabetic, and they're pretty much, you know, their doctors saying medically they don't have it anymore. Well, same with people who are even diabetes type 1, where I've seen reduction in their insulin intake by up to 50 to 70%.
Wow, that is amazing. So, but this is something that doctors can use and patients can use and work with the doctor, and even it can work right along. I mean, you work right along with medications, and then if you get better, then you can maybe cut down, the doctor can cut down on the medications. Is that's basically how they use it?
That's how it is being used. In a lot of cases, some people can't take certain medications due to the fact that they just have, you know, straight up allergies to these medications. In some cases, even, you know, deadly allergies. If they take the medication, it can, you know, kill them. And so it's definitely something to, you know, to be offered up, in lieu of, due to the fact it has so much potential. But yeah, there's a lot of doctors who are using it, to help reduce the medication load for a lot of people, helping them to manage their pain specifically, because of course, you know, pain's no fun. But just by, you know, increasing the circulation to those areas, we're seeing effects that, you know, really weren't even trying to achieve. It's just, you know, it's what the body it's needing, and it just takes the energy and uses it.
Okay. So now how does this work? I mean, what is really going on? Because some people out there are going to say, oh, this sounds like, you know, this just sounds like I'm making it up or something. It sounds too good to be true. But there's science behind it. So how does it, what is the light actually doing to the body that helps the body heal?
Probably one of the reasons why the medical community, you know, Western medicine, medical doctors, don't really understand it is due to the fact that it's more physics-based than it is biological. Now, the biology, of course, interplays with that due to the fact that just the way our divine design was, you know, we have light-sensitive enzymes in certain parts in the body. Like you have chromophores, which are an optical window to certain cells, which allows direct transmission to even to the center of the cell. So the body utilizes light, and a lot of the new research is starting to show through what they call biophoton exchange, which means cell to cell, where they actually communicate with small, tiny pulses of different colored light specifically. And so this is kind of cutting edge research that's been looked at for the last, you know, 10 years or so. But it's really being highly studied. And so now they're really starting to see and understand the potential of how light is able to do all of these things.
So it's kind of like the cells, the light is communicating. Is that kind of like quorum sensing where the cells are communicating with each other? And you're saying they actually can communicate with light?
Well, with just other? Pretty much so. When you radiate any atoms, and of course our bodies, our cells are all made up of collections of different atoms bound together as compounds, they have a specific absorption and emission spectra, which is directly based off the periodic table. And so the cells themselves, being highly specialized, like you said, they have these chromophores, which allow light to be absorbed. And once the light hits a certain threshold, and it has to be the right color, right wavelength, whether it's a certain range of infrared or if it's in the visible spectrum, certain compounds will, when given those wavelengths, it will actually charge it up to a certain point until it hits a threshold. And I kind of equate it to just like when you're maybe in high school, when you did chemistry class, where, you know, the professor would give you two compounds and say, okay, let's put it in a beaker of water. And of course, when you put them together, nothing happened at room temperature. So out comes the Bunsen burner. And of course, we're adding energy. Well, heat is just infrared energy that's being delivered directly to those elements. And so when it hit a certain temperature or energy threshold, all of a sudden a chemical reaction would occur. We were doing kind of the exact same thing with light in the body, but we have to make sure we're using the right colored light to trigger those specific chemical and reactions and physiological changes. So that's kind of the basic premises. Through photoionization, we're able to kickstart chemical reactions, which normally the body would take care of. But in the case of a disease state, the body is no longer pulling off the chemistry required to maintain itself. And hence, once that occurs, now you're going to see symptoms show up, and collection of symptoms equals a disease.
Uh-huh. So basically it's the energies of the lights, the different energetic frequencies of the lights that actually interacts with the body and causes these reactions?
Well, it's pretty much a loading up of the tissue specifically, you know, keeping it under the thermal aspect, because you can only warm the tissue up so much before then you can actually cause damage. And so this is a low-level light application where we're not looking at it from a thermal perspective of causing damage to the tissue, because of course there's lasers that do that, like laser hair removal and even lasers they use in surgery. So this is a much lower energy application where it's more controlled and pretty much within the range of what would be normal for the body. So we're able to assist the body directly with the chemistry through this photoionization process. But when we start looking into the actual chemistry, this is where it really gets interesting on what you're actually activating.
Okay. So now, there are different colors. Tell us what these different colors are and what they do.
Well, for the most part, a lot of the cell tissue and the different types of tissues will have a specific affinity to different colors or wavelengths. So anytime we're talking about that, where it resides on the electromagnetic spectrum, we try to stick to using the term of wavelength. Now, we know every color also has a specific frequency, which is measured in terahertz. But we try to rely upon using the term of wavelength, which is more of a physical measurement of peak-to-peak wave value. So that way we don't crisscross and get confused. Because when we talk about frequency in terms with light therapy, what we're really speaking to is taking a certain wavelength or color, and then the frequency comes in when we take that light and we pulse it on and off to the tissue at a rapid rate, sometimes not very rapid. And so in doing so, by pulsing the light, we've been able to get much more response out of the body in some cases, where if you use the continuous light directly to the tissue, it would load up slowly, but it really wouldn't give the effects you were looking for. But by pulsing it, we can sometimes drive things into action just based on the pulse rate.
Okay. So it's more, are you saying it's more the pulse rate than the color of the light?
No, because the pulse rate, it's very specific. It's almost like matching the cell-to-cell communication. But if you're not using the right color, then it's like speaking Japanese to somebody
okay.
who knows English.
Okay.
And so by getting the perfect match of the right color, the right wavelength for absorption capacities, and then you've got more or less with the pulsing of the light, now you've got an instruction set specifically to help drive certain actions much more rapidly.
Okay, so, and it's more targeted then. It's more...
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You can get more of a controlled response that you're looking for. But primarily, the real magic is in getting the proper wavelength and hitting the energy threshold to put things into action.
Yeah. Okay. Now, all of this is sounding so complicated. Now, what about people? What about people that they're saying, well, wait a minute, I think I want to use this, but he's talking way over my head. Is this going to be so too complicated for me to use? Am I going to have to use this with my doctor? And some people should, you know, if you've got especially a serious illness. But is this something that people can you kind of simplify it so people say, well, you know, can people use this at home?
Well, here's the nice part about it, because most of the companies who produce any of these devices have pretty much done all the scientific work for them. And of course, this is when, you know, you have a device that's ready to go to market and you're getting a therapeutic response from it. Well, obviously, you have to, you know, prove that to a governing body such as the FDA. and solicit your, you know, your double blind studies and what have you. And of course, that's when they'll give you a clearance so that you can work on specific symptoms and or conditions. Now, devices don't get approved, they get cleared for usages. And so one of the devices I use primarily is the LED system, Enlight Wellness System. This is the one that I've had so much success with, and it is FDA cleared for, you know, reducing pain and increasing circulation.
Okay, so now is this good for, so now I know you use red lights and infrared light and yellow light and the different lights. How does this compare to the white LED lights that like in our homes, which I've read is not good for us? So it's some good for you and some not.
Well, there's two different subjects there, and I'll address the first question, because with the Enlight system, pretty much they only use near infrared, red, and blue. So those are the only three colors that they primarily use, because there's so much research backing those three up. And each color of light can do certain actions in the body, which per se the other color can't. But what I really love about the unique approach that they've done is they've teamed up colors where you'll have, in a pad, you'll have a near infrared as well as a red diode right beside it. And when you're using a polychromatic approach, which means just more than one light source, instead of just a single light source like a laser, you're able to slightly warm the tissue, bring its energy threshold up based on whatever tissue you're targeting. And then you're also able to trigger it and also get deeper penetration due to the fact that you're using two wavelengths instead of just one. Because red per se won't really heat up tissue, but if you use it in conjunction with the two, you can get a much deeper pronounced effect with that combination of light. And then they also use blue and infrared, and then they have red and blue and infrared all in one. So in each pad, each collection of colors you can use for different types of conditions, because your blue is highly absorbed on the surface within the first 3 to 4 millimeters of tissue. Your red is more 8 to 10 millimeters. And then of course, now you're looking at with the near infrared penetration anywhere from 20 to 100. So that's about approximately 4 inches of depth, depending on what relative tissue that you're trying to get that level of penetration. And when it's teamed up with the near infrared, it warms the tissue up, which gets the cells moving and allows the other two colors to penetrate deeper as well.
Yeah, okay. So now I wanted to ask you, you know, sometimes some of these spas have they use, some of them use the red and the yellow LED lights and all. Is this basically the same thing? Are they not using mats or anything? It's just like a thing you lay under. And I actually tried that the other day. I went to a spa and, you know, it's supposed to help, you know, with the skin and all that kind of thing. It's supposed to be real good for you and everything, stimulate cell growth and everything. But my eyes were very, very sensitive to it, and my eyeballs hurt a few days after it, and I'm like, I don't like this, you know. So I don't know if I want to use that again. Is this along the same principle as what you're doing, or is it totally different?
It's along the same principle, because of course light is light, but the difference is, as I mentioned, here's where it comes into effect when you have a therapeutic dosage or not. And this is why with a pad system where you're putting it directly on the skin, you're not losing much ambient light. Most of it is getting directly where you need to hit the threshold to put it into therapeutic action. And so a lot of cases, these new beds and stuff, unless they've been looked at and they've done double blind studies and the FDA has given them clearance relative to pain and everything else, pretty much their evidence is mostly anecdotal. And therefore, you know, you're just getting bombasted with a whole lot of red light, and you might have a real feel good sensation because you're accessing the meridians of the body because you're hitting it from every different direction. But is it going to create a stabilizing effect, specifically if I had like a diabetic wound, enough to actually kick on a healing response? In my experience, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so now tell us more about, you mentioned nitric oxide. Let's talk about more of what this is doing in the body and how it's working. What is nitric oxide and what does it do and why is it important to the body?
Well, nitric oxide, if there's well over, I think, 40,000 research articles on the interplay of nitric oxide. And it's pretty much used by every system in your body. It's kind of like the initiator or the precursor molecule to kick on the healing response in the body.
Because it jump starts your healing then.
Correct. Like it's the core proponent for angiogenesis, the building of new capillaries and blood vessels when you have a clot or a blockage, or if it's been damaged. So nitric oxide is almost always there in every situation. You know, like the immune system actually will utilize it for killing cancer cells. Also, it helps with RNA DNA synthesis for cells to rebuild themselves and make protein chains to repair themselves. It's you know, collagen synthesis, and this is where, you know, in the cosmetic field, that's obviously wonderful because, you know, if you've got wrinkles, it's pockets of dead collagen where you can actually help to stimulate the proliferation of that collagen to smooth out the complexion.
Okay.
So it's, yeah, it's at use in every aspect of the body.
So you have to have nitric oxide in order to be healthy and live, it sounds like, huh?
it's a core element. It's the primary trigger that sets everything into motion. And then you get cascading reactions specifically to that.
Okay, so it's basically, are you saying it's pretty much at the beginning of the healing process? You have to have that to jumpstart everything else?
Correct.
Okay, okay. And so these lights, these mats that you're talking about where the lights are in, they basically jumpstart the nitric, they get the nitric oxide.
Well, what it does is it's primarily the hemoglobin and the myoglobin in the actual blood. And so when the light is collected by that, this is what will kick on the production of the nitric oxide and even the release of it. So as soon as it comes off, it's a gas. And so it also acts as a neurotransmitter, and it will actually produce nitric oxide directly from the endothelium as well. But then it'll circle back, and then it can redock, and that creates vasodilation. And there's the mechanism of action specifically for increasing circulation. And one of the things that I'm educating people on continuously is the effect, because a lot of people say, well, you know, okay, I get that it reduces pain and that's great, but, you know, lack of circulation, it's like, I think my circulation is just fine. Well, it's not a coincidence that heart disease is the biggest killer, because most people are walking around with inflamed blood vessels. And, you know, you're slowly working your way towards that heart condition. And so nitric oxide also helps to regulate your blood pressure, all different types of things. It's at play everywhere. So the light therapy can assist in so many ways. In almost every disease, a core component of the symptoms evolving and progressing you to a disease is lack of circulation into or out of the area.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Make it a daily stop and also get the app. You go right to the App Store and download our free app, and that will put all our content right into your hands on your phones and your tablets. It doesn't get any easier than that.
If you don't have good circulation, you can't effectively detox and get nutrients into your cells because the circulation is what causes that to happen. And so this basically, the lights help, they stimulate nitric oxide production, blood circulation, and you also heard you mention it increases the lymphatic circulation. So that's also a very important type of circulation also. And when your circulation increases in your blood and your lymphatic system, then you're able to remove waste and absorb more nutrients, and that itself can help the healing process. So it's really getting the body jump started to healing itself. It's basically what this is doing, right?
Yeah. And one of the biggest problems is the stress response. Like when people are stressed, their muscles, they're, a lot of cases, they're contracting and not even realizing it. You know, they're clenching their jaw, and it can create major effects throughout the body of, you know, their biceps being tight, their legs. I've done stress tests on people where it's like I'll hold their leg out in front of them while they're sitting on a chair and ask them to relax. And they'll say, I am relaxed. And I let go of their foot, and their leg's still sticking straight forward.
Wow,
because they've lost pretty much that neuro homeostasis to actually understand, you know, that whether their muscles relaxed or it's actually contracted. And so any place you have that, you're going to have a stagnation of the lymphatic system as well as the blood flow. Now your arteries have no problem, you know, because they can turn up the pressure. They're heavily muscled and they'll drive the blood in. But unfortunately, the tissue now acts like a sponge instead of a pass through like a hose out the other side. And so it shows up in your, you know, more overflow of the lymphatic fluid, because the more pressure on the blood vessels, the more overspill. And of course, everything becomes stagnant. And then once that area now is full of toxicities and or even food in the tissues, your carbon dioxide's not leaving, and neither is your waste products. So now the cells, just to save themselves, pretty much send out and tell the cells to slow down on their production of energy, everything else, because they're slowly starting to suffocate.
Yeah, not the enough. System's getting clogged up because correct. Things can't move out because things are contracted and just shut down, basically, if you close the circulation, if you hinder the circulation and everything.
Yeah.
Huh, very interesting. Now, how does this compare with some of the other type of alternative therapies? You've got the BioMat, you've got the Beamer. The Beamer helps increase circulation and lymphatic circulation also. How does this compare to those?
I've looked at many different types of devices out there. And the thing is, when it comes to light therapy, if you're not utilizing something that has near infrared, 85% of the research that's been done on light therapy specifically in relation to the infrared spectrum, you're not getting significant release of nitric oxide and ATP production. So 85% of the research is on near infrared. Now, your far infrared is still useful, but it doesn't produce those two same effects. And so, I've caught some of these companies who like to smudge the research and say infrared does, but they're talking about they're lumping far infrared, mid infrared, and near infrared all together in one category and being slightly deceptive on the fact that no, it's a far infrared sauna. It's going to create a hyperthermic condition in the body, get you sweating, which is a fantastic way to get rid of toxicities, help the system unload. But at the same time, it's not producing any significant amounts of nitric oxide and or ATP production to help support the body on that level. So it's not creating direct cellular action. It is increasing the metabolism of the body, putting it into a fever-like state and almost mimicking exercise. So it's still beneficial, but the mechanism of action is different. Now, when you go to pulse magnetic, say something like the Beamer, I actually need to have a conversation specifically with somebody who is in the know on this device, because one of the confusing things is they talk about it helps to induce vasomotor function. Now, of course, that's kind of like, the contraction relaxation action directly in the blood vessels. So my question has always been, is it being done through an electrical induction aspect or magnetic induction, or is it just creating a flip-flop shift on the iron and the hemoglobin to release the nitric oxide and create that action? And so I can't really comment until I've had that question answered. Mm-hmm. And so far no one's been able to answer that for me.
Yeah. I need to talk to you even after this. I have a Beamer and a BioMat, but I'm not sure on that question that you just asked on that. I want to say it has the first part, the electromagnetic force that's doing that, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So I need to check on that. So are you saying, I want to back up a little bit. Now you said because I have seen through the years, most people are always for advocates for far infrared, but there are very few that are advocates for near infrared technology. And there's been kind of a little debate, some say this is better and some say that's better. In your opinion, is either one better than the other one, or are they just two different ways and they're both, one's just as good as the other, but you just need both of them? Because I've wondered myself now, which really is better, near infrared or far infrared? And I've seen arguments on both sides.
Well, as I said, there's probably 85% of the research that's been done on the infrared spectrum, which is far, mid, and near. 85% of it's being done on the near infrared because it creates a direct physiological change at the cellular level.
Okay.
Whereas the far infrared, it's not really measurable or significant enough.
Okay.
And so it works more on a heating principle. Now, yeah. With the BioMat, I've investigated many of these, and I've traveled all over. And of course, it's a great device. Now, it depends also specifically on the level of crystal in the actual color matrix within that amethyst when it's crushed up, because the higher content of purple can make the difference on whether it's clear or if it's purple in relation to how it will actually absorb the far infrared element and transform it. So it spreads it more into a spectrum of far, mid, and near. So the higher quotient that you have based on the crystals that they crushed up to put in it, that's going to be the predicting factor on whether yours is got a higher percentage of near infrared being given off, or is it more in the far infrared? And this is why I've seen results all over the map with some of these people. A lot of them say, well, it didn't do a thing for me, and other people swear by it. So I always tell people, if you've got one that's given you some good results and it's working for you, keep it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very interesting take on that. Okay, well, I wanted to ask also about, because my daughter had eye therapy, where she had to do a lot of eye exercises and all that. We've had, some issues with her. And they also use light therapy with her. But now this had nothing to do with mats or anything. But they used where she would look at light. We had to get in a dark, dark room, and we had to turn this really dark. For her, they used a deep purple light. And she couldn't even, is this just the same principle as these mats? Or is it working on a different aspect of healing? But she couldn't. She could only do so much. But it was making her worse. And after so long, and we just had to stop it. And that was like the lowest they could go on the light intensity. But she couldn't even handle that. So I didn't know really what that was. Why that was so much worse for her. And is this the same thing, same type principle as these mats? Because you can use light therapy by just looking at the lights instead of the mats. I was just wondering if that's a similar.
Well, that sounds like color therapy specifically. Yeah. And the brain reacts differently to different types of colors. It can even affect, certain chemicals being produced in the brain. And it's a very intricate science. It's usually very subtle. But at the same time, if you're dealing with somebody who's had a head trauma, in a lot of cases, people have them and don't realize it because, they banged their head 20 years ago, got up and kept walking. And meanwhile, they've been suffering the effects of it ever since then. Like getting into your car and smacking your head on the doorpost, that can be enough to cause damage to your pituitary gland.
Uh-huh.
But you pretty much don't really take note of it. And it's like later on, things slowly start to not work quite as well and you can't remember as much. So usually when a person has problem with intensity of light in the eyes, even at low levels, that usually to me is there's probably a head trauma that's occurred at some point, and that's usually what'll happen is once that occurs is they'll start to clench. When they clench, this slowly debilitates the blood supply to the brain because the head will reposture forward, and sooner or later now you're going to get possible calcification of the pineal gland, and this is when they become highly light sensitive to any color. And okay. Or even going inside. So I see a lot of that.
Okay, because I've heard the pineal gland can get calcified, and a lot of Americans are, their pineal gland is calcified. Can this light therapy reverse that and help heal the pineal gland?
Well, one of the problems is if we don't shut down the clenching mechanism, which is debilitating the blood supply through the carotid and the jugular and the head's ability to drain, usually what occurs when the head repositions, this can directly affect the thyroid. And here's where the calcium in the blood becomes running rich, because once the thyroid's affected, your calcitonin levels can be directly affected, which hormonally says how much calcium from your diet goes into your bones as opposed to how much comes out. But unfortunately, once the thyroid's hindered, this is when the adrenals turn on, which only amplifies the response. So if you've got calcium-rich blood and your head's forward and you're creating imposition on the blood supply going up to the head as well as leaving, here's how and why the pineal gland gets calcified. Okay. And if you have a head trauma, it just gets even more complex.
Okay, I want you to talk about this, about the jaw being clenched. I want you to talk about our posture and how that can, because it sounds like this is maybe the beginning of a lot of our problems. Maybe the stress that we're going through and how it affects our posture and what is the cascading effect that goes from there. So talk about that, the head and neck and the problems that can arise from improper posture or stress and that kind of a thing.
Well, our bodies were designed to stand up and have a natural curve in the back of the neck as well as the lower back. It's just, part of, chiropractic, normal function of our bodies. When the stress response hits, here's where the problem lies, because the actual muscles in the jaw will fire when you're stressed. It doesn't necessarily mean you'll clench. At some point you may begin to clench or even clench while you're sleeping at night. But one of the biggest problems, and I do a whole seminar on this specifically, talking about the nutritional deficiencies that have occurred with eating processed foods over the last, you know, three generations. And this was all cited back with Francis Pottinger. He saw these same problems with cats occur, where the skulls started to narrow when they were feeding the cats cooked meat and cooked milk, as opposed to the ones who were eating raw meat and raw milk. Those cats had no problems, just the ones that were getting cooked meat and cooked milk. Their skulls narrowed. The lower mandible didn't grow to full length. Pretty much the dental arch became dramatic. All of these deformities start to show up. Well, Weston Price, who was a dentist, he took all of this information, and then he actually monitored a tribe that pretty much ate from the land, and he measured their skulls, the length of their jaw, the height of their back molars, all of these parameters. And what he saw in one generation of when processed foods were being brought into the village, in the offspring, the children were having the exact same problems. Well, this created huge issues in relation to them neurologically, because your brain actually utilizes the oral cavity and the height of the back molars from left to right, or what they call your occlusion, to feel what balance is, so it can set your posture.
Very interesting. I haven't thought about that.
And so the stress response, if there's any imbalance there, which I have yet to run into somebody who doesn't have it, what occurs is that imbalance in the occlusion plus the stress response, this impacts and causes the body to be contracted on one side. So if you draw a line down the center of a person's body and you look in the mirror, even yourself, you'll notice that one eye is higher than the other, or more open than the other. The shoulder on that side is high, and also the hips high. Well, this is not coincidence. This is neurologically your brain saying that the teeth on that side are touching first, and it's your high point, and the other side's a low point. So the brain feels the height of the back molars and then sets the rest of the body up in accordance to what it feels in the mouth. And this was proven back in the 1950s by Penfield and Rasmussen, who wrote The Cerebral Cortex of Man, and found that all the peripheral nervous system feedback to the central nervous system, over 50% of it occurs right in the oral cavity. That's extraordinary.
Wow, that is. That is. So how do you fix that? I mean, how do you need to go to a chiropractor and then use some of these mats, lot therapy? I mean, you know, like the curvature in my neck is just gone. You know, it's just my neck straight. And so I need to get that, you know, I don't know, you know, and other people have these problems too. And most of us have poor posture. Should we go to chiropractors first and start getting things lined up, then use the mats, or can the mats help do that? Or how do you fix these problems?
Well, here's part of the problem, because if you can go to a chiropractor, they can adjust you, but this is why the adjustments, a lot of cases, don't hold, because the brain's prioritizing its energy or its balance directly from the teeth. And so I'm not saying run to your dentist and get your occlusion balance, because most cases you've been walking around like that for about 10 to 20 to 30 years, and now you've got degeneration in the actual masseter muscle, and so it's shortened all by itself from degeneration. So you need to be doing something like the light therapy, helping to do it. And what I'll usually do is splint the dental so it confuses the brain and will engage parasympathetic via the back molars on both sides of the body. So it changes the input to the brain, and then we can utilize the light therapy to kickstart the circulation and get the tissue now clearing itself out, because even while you're sleeping, that contraction is always there. And the more stress you add to it, the greater the contraction and even torquing of the spine. And so the other part that's even more disastrous is the fact that because of that, the brain doesn't like to feel the tension in the jaw. So it'll reposition the head forward to kind of stretch out the facial muscles. And unfortunately, it doesn't do any good, because once the head goes forward, the pelvis has to either rotate forward to get underneath the weight so you don't fall over, thereby losing the curve in the back of the neck as well as in the lower back. And your brain's telling you that's normal, but it's not.
So, and I heard you mention too in another interview that you're, when the posture gets so off and off balanced, that it can block the drainage from the neck, and that can cause the glands to get swollen and actually affect the thyroid. Is that
correct?
True? Okay, yeah. Well, now this is very interesting because I had a cyber scan done, which was an energetic thing, and it scanned the whole body. And it said that because my glands under my jaw, and I know several people can say this, so I kind of want to say this so other people can learn, but the glands under my jaw have been swollen since I was a kid. And yep. And that scan showed, which the scan that I used, they say is really close to like an artificial intelligence machine. It can think for itself. They say you can't really say it's an AI machine because you have to turn it on, but it basically can think for itself. But anyway, basically what it said is that I have a blockage. My neck is blocked. You know, the drainage is blocked, and that's affecting my thyroid. So this is amazing because it just verified what you're just saying. You know, so that's two different sources that saying the same thing. So that makes me think, well, that's probably something to that, you know. So you're saying these mats can help, the light therapy can help the posture, can help everything kind of like straighten out and help the drainage, help with the circulation, lymphatics, and help remove blockages like in the neck so that the neck can drain, you know, so that the glands from the neck can drain and kind of like help things, you know, heal up that way and even help the thyroid. I mean, y'all have had some good results with thyroid issues with these mats, haven't you?
Well, that's exactly it, because all of these things I describe with the descent of the posture going into what it is, once the posture is out, you're now putting compression on spinal nerves, which are running to your organs and your glands. So now you're getting stellar communication from the brain out to those peripherals, but also coming back to the brain. So this is what I see, like the symptoms just start to collect and show up and become more and more pronounced, and the stress response only gets bigger and bigger. And of course, this is one of the best ways I've ever seen and this is why I developed these protocols specifically to address where does stress put the key in and ignite everything else below it. And it's really, it starts in the jaw. And so hence, that's why I start there. Because you have nerve fibers which run from the jaw that go directly to your vagus nerve, which is your parasympathetic.
Mm-hmm. And a major nerve that dictates so much in your body.
A single small dental infection can be enough to offset your nervous system on one side of your body so it's completely contracted and cause your neck pain and your back pain.
Wow. This is amazing, because I mean, we've talked a lot about stress on this show, and the thing about my show, The Misdiagnosed Life, is I'm all about trying to get to the root cause of problems. And of course, there's no silver bullet, but you know, I never thought about maybe the root cause of some of our problems, or a lot of our problems, health problems, may actually start with a jaw. You know, I've never thought about that.
I've researched something new. I've researched it heavily because I started off with doing biofeedback, and you have to understand the whole stress response, Hans Selye's work of the general adaptation syndrome. Well, interestingly enough, Hans Selye actually connected with some of the neuromuscular dentists, guy by the name of A.C. Fonder, who wrote a fantastic article called Dental Distress Syndrome. And he actually, back in the 40s, was pretty much reconstructing people's jaws where they've been blown off in the war or what have you, rebalancing their occlusion. And he kept track of all the different things that were wrong with these people, their symptoms, before doing any of the surgery on them. And what he found is, after he repaired the occlusion with major surgery and using mercury amalgam fillings, which I would never want to use, but his success rate was phenomenal in helping getting rid of all different types of conditions, even skin issues like psoriasis, autoimmune diseases just stop happening. Because to me, it all starts off as a neurological imbalance, transcends directly to affect the circulation system, and everything now goes into a state of accumulation onwards to towards degeneration. Well, I forgot inflammation first, but you can't win that battle because everything's contracted and everything's backing up on one side of the body, which is taking the other side down with it.
So the first thing you've got to do with health, it sounds to me like, is get the body in a relaxed state, everything more relaxed, and you know, the energy flowing, the everything flowing, and get the blockages in the circulation, the lymphatics. Then you've got something to work with, and of course, kickstarting the nitric oxide more, getting that working more. So, see, this is one of the problems with healthcare that, you know, with mainstream healthcare that too many times, and this is a lot in alternative medicine too, they're just putting, you know, Band-Aids on things, or they're just working way down the way down the limb of the tree, you know, when we need to be working more toward the root of the tree and going back to where the problems are actually starting. And that's my whole idea of the misdiagnosed life and trying to get the information out so people can understand. And there's no silver bullet, but there's different aspects of things that you can look at. And this is a big one here, but the main goal for all of us is just, you know, the main goal is to try to get to the root cause, because my main goal is to try to you know, help people to learn more about maybe where the root cause is on things, so that we can, because once you handle the root cause, then all the other problems will just sooner or later more than likely disappear, you know, when you really get to the root cause of things. And so this is very interesting.
One of the interesting things is, like, the National Institute of Health even said 95% of disease is caused by stress. But that's as far as they went. They didn't start explaining what's the physiological response, what's triggering it. And so that's why I was so hard-pressed, because I would put clients on detox programs and work with them, and they progress well, and then all of a sudden they just hit a wall. And it's like, it was finally, once I looked at the dental, understood the whole neurological connection there, and added the stress response to it, it was like, This is where everything, all the action gets, you know, it's like the snowball rolling down the hill. You make a little one, and then once you let it go down the hill, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
That's
unless
right.
you're doing something to directly stop it. And if you're not working from the jaw where it starts in the first place to give the brain new input and re-engage the parasympathetic, you really can't fix it. Like, so many people, even gastroenterologists I've had conversations with, and they said, oh, well, you can get rid of passive leaky gut and this and that. I'm going, oh yeah, well, what's your success rate? And be honest. And they're like, about, you know, 30-40%. I'm going, yeah, exactly. Because you can't fix a gut that you can't get moving again. Because wherever there's stagnation, you'll have overgrowth of fungus, yeast, and all these other things. So that's why I always go back to address, rebalance the neurology from left to right of the body, and put the person back in parasympathetic dominance. This automatically kickstarts peristaltic motion in the gut. 9 times out of 10, I don't even have to supplement them. The gut will heal itself if you can keep it moving.
So this gets the body out of the sympathetic fight or flight state into the parasympathetic state where it can relax, and that's where healing takes place, is in that relaxed state.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And also, too, I want to say, you know, there's also other energetic things and emotional things that sometimes you have to deal with also. But this is a huge physiological thing that sounds to me like really needs to be addressed in order to really heal. Because you have to look at the big picture in different areas of life and get to the root cause of that. But that's key to healing, is getting out of that fight or flight. And I've talked about this a lot on this show, the fight or flight state. And that's one of the problems with stress. You know, it gets you in that state. And we stay in that state, and it's like you talked about, our body adapts to it, and our body thinks that's normal, and it's not normal. And then you've got all of these other things start happening mentally, emotionally, physically, and then you've just described how physiologically and structurally the bad things start happening and going off the trail, so to speak. The light therapy helps the body get into the parasympathetic relaxed state.
Yeah. Anytime wherever you're putting those pads, with the release of the nitric oxide, you're going to get, you know, usually within 3 seconds, vasodilation. Well, that's a clear indication that the parasympathetic nervous system has now been activated, because they both work on an on system. You have to turn them on. A lot of people talk about it like, you know, the parasympathetic is like putting the brakes on and the sympathetic's like the gas. Well, relatively, yes, but you still have to activate the parasympathetic. And if there's anything upholding or impeding it specifically, and this is where you can't bypass it, because the brain's taking an input to set the posture and activating mild sympathetic on one side. When it starts accumulating, now it becomes excessive, and it continues to generate and become more excessive. So if you're not directly going back to that primary spot to release the rest of the body, and then you can clean up. Otherwise, you're wasting a lot of your money, a lot of your time. And this is why I've pretty much made a living off of mystery cases. The doctors pretty much said, I'm sorry, we can't do anything more for you.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense. So now, does this also help? I wanted to ask this question. Does this also help mitochondrial function? because more and more research is coming out about just how very important our mitochondria is.
Remember what I mentioned about how when the contraction is in the tissue and, of course, the arteries keep on pushing the food in and even the oxygen, but what happens is the waste products and carbon dioxide start to pile up. This directly signals back to the cells to stop producing too much energy because there's not enough oxygen to feed the problem. Now you're also, your free radicals start to go through the roof because it's sitting in an area. The oxygen is still getting, it's still getting brought in and dropped off, but now it starts binding with other things because due to the competition in relation to the carbon dioxide. The carbon dioxide is suffocating the cell, and the cell powers down on purpose so it doesn't run out of gas. There's your mitochondrial dysfunction. Now add a little heavy metals into that, and you got a real recipe for disaster. And hence, this is why they're blaming it on mitochondria, but it all goes back to circulation. You turn the circulation on, the mitochondria kickstart. And light therapy directly boosts nitric oxide off the mitochondria, which acts like a braking system and can expedite ATP production, which is the fuel required for the cell.
That's your energy. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and your body has to have energy to heal. It has to have energy to do everything.
Light therapy supports both, bringing the nutrients in and out, waste products and carbon dioxide out of the area, and it's directly assisting the cells locally to now produce ATP production so that they can start cleaning house and their terrain.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, very interesting. Okay, well, let's talk about what people need to do. What do they need to know to get these machines? How do they get these mats? And is it difficult to operate? Or do they need to call somebody and discuss their specific case so they'll know which mats to get?
Well, I work directly with the ARs who work for InLight, and pretty much because they hire me out to go and teach seminars, education, and then also training, after sale. But I personally don't do the sales, but I work with a colleague specifically, and I can give you her information if people want to contact her and know more.
Okay, well, we'll do that here in just a minute right at the end. We're almost finished. We're about to run out of time here. But I did want to ask these mats. Now, is there a specific... What specific, are there specific crystals that are in these mats?
Well, no, these are pretty much just LEDs.
Okay, no crystals in them. So they're just LED lights. Okay. Do they get hot?
They get warm because part of the therapy is to mildly warm the tissue up to create a bit more space so you can get deeper penetration of the other colors.
Okay. Now, how long are these sessions and how many times a day do you need to do it?
Well, primarily you can do 20 up to 30 minutes on an area. But the thing is, with light therapy, it's not the same as, you know, a lot of people think, you know, well, a little bit's good, more must be better. Not with light therapy, because if you put it on and leave it on too long, then you start to shut down your benefits because you go into, well, the scientific term is called accommodation of tissues. So the light will actually load up, and then once it's charged up, that's when you want to take it off and let the body get to work. Mm-hmm. But if you continue radiating it, then you create a mild stress condition on the tissue. And it's not going to harm it. It's just going to exhaust it. And of course, exhausted tissue is not going to recover as fast as energized tissue.
Yeah. So about 20 to 30 minutes, probably 20 minutes would be good enough. You just want to do just the right amount so the body can have the energy to do what it needs to do.
Well, and it depends on what you're working on too. Like I said, if I'm directly trying to assist somebody who's had a TBI or a stroke or something like that, or dementia or Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and I need to get the energy through the skull, well then I'm looking at 30 minutes, and if they got a big head of hair, I might be pushing 40.
Okay.
To get it through, but for the most part, like I said, it's 20 minutes on an area specifically.
Okay. Are these mats difficult to operate, or are they just pretty much plug and play type thing, you know, for the average person?
I've got an 8-year-old son. He's been using it since he was 5.
Okay. And there's no best time to use it, is there? You just use it just whenever you get time to use it. Is it once a day enough?
It depends on what's going on with people. A lot of cases, once a day is, you know, great. For somebody who's just got some minor issues going on, some pain issues, what have you, once a day, you know, you can kind of manage your pain, and or in some cases it even resolves it. Everyone's different, and there's no set rules in relation to how people will respond and how they heal. because that's, you know, I've always said healing is your responsibility in your personal journey. Like, that's just the way it is. So yeah, I could have 10 people who have diabetic wounds, and they're all going to recover at a different rate because of lifestyle factors, this, that, and just their constitution.
Right, right. So now, how long does it usually take for people to start getting results or seeing some results?
It's kind of the rule of three, I call it, because I've just seen it so many years and, you know, working with so many clients. You'll see results sometimes, you know, a lot of people get right the first session they have. They're just like, wow, it's like my pain's completely gone. Sometimes it never comes back. But for the most part, it's usually 3 days, 3 weeks, or 3 months. That's where we see the results start to filter in. And that really depends on what type of issue/condition that's, you know, being worked with.
Or a lot of times people work with their doctor, because, and I know you've taught some doctors, and I think you're going to be teaching some more medical doctors. Now, this is medical doctors. So if you, especially if you have a serious condition, you know, maybe you can talk with your doctor about it if you are interested in this, and he may be interested in, learning himself. But and there may be some other people that's going to be teaching doctors how to use this. So I'm really pleased. I'm really glad of that, because this is something that sounds like it's going to really be helpful. And I know a good friend of mine, was telling me about this, and he's blown away with it. So he's getting good results, and other people he knows getting good results with it. But of course, if you have a serious illness, this is something you would need to, you know, mention to your doctor and maybe let him work with you and let him give him some information so he can learn more about it himself, especially since the medical profession is open to this. And I'm really glad that they are. So who do people need to contact if they want to find out more information or maybe talk to someone about, you know, purchasing one?
Like I said, I work with an associate specifically. Her name is Christina Pigeon. She has a website, which is www.hltforyou.com. You can get some information there.
Okay, and that's for you, just a letter U.
Four and you, yes, number four. And also her phone number that you can contact her directly, 773-456-7169.
Okay, well, very good. Well, Wes, it's been really good having you on the show today. And what we'll do, we'll have this information below the podcast on the website, the misdiagnosedlife.com or americaoutloud.com. So just look below the podcast on the website, and the information will be there if you want to go there and pursue this a little further. But again, it's been very good to have you on the show today, Wes. It's been a very interesting interview, and I wish you luck with all that you're doing, and just continue to help a lot of people out there. Thank you for listening. This is Beverly Butler with the Misdiagnosed Life podcast on the America Out Loud Network.